any talk about Maurice Jones-Drew not being here for any other reason other than to train and to rehab is completely off base. This guy is as all in as I've seen him since I've been here. And I think Maurice is ready to have a big year if he can get healthy, and I think that's the issue going forward.
This is Jaguars This Week. Jaguars This Week. With the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton. Color analyst Jeff Lagerman, Jaguars.com senior writer John Osher, and Tony Boselli.
Now that's a cool cat.
Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange and by Everbank.
Jaguars This Week.
Jaguars This Week
begins right now.
All right, welcome to Jaguars This Week, live from the News Talk 690 WOKV. I shouldn't say 690 because they're 104.5 now. That's just old habit. Live from the studios at Cox Media in Jacksonville, Florida, Brian Sexton along with Jeff Lagerman, Tony Boselli, and John Osher. Thanks to Stephanie and to Ed and the whole crew here, Tim, for clearing out and making way so we could do our show from their studios this evening. And lots to talk about. We'll start real quick with the topic that Gus Bradley started his post-OTA press conference with, and that was JT Townsend, obviously a young man who, you know, more than, what, 8-9 years ago, lost his ability to walk, was paralyzed, became paraplegic in a football accident, and went on to inspire an entire community, got his degree from the University of North Florida, and met and influenced people all over the First Coast. I woke up this morning, saw tweets all over the place, I've seen it on TV, guys were talking about it on the field out there today. In his time from when he had the accident to now, Logs, really made a positive impact, the kind you hope all of us make in our lifetime.
Well, you hope that you can accomplish what he has with some of the limitations that he had. I mean, he really was an inspiration. I had a chance to get to meet him numerous times over the years, and a couple weeks ago when he came out to the Jaguars OTA day, and he was very proud to talk about his graduation from North Florida. To have him lost overnight, you know, kind of unexpectedly, that's a sad note, but also his spirit will live on because he certainly was an extremely positive influence on a lot of people.
All right, we got a lot to talk about tonight, a lot to talk about. We're going to start with Maurice Jones-Drew, and then we will work our way through the Jaguars in the United Kingdom, obviously. That's become a story. We'll take your calls, 340-1045. That's 340-1045. If you'd like to join us on the program this evening, you know, this is an interesting question. Obviously, Maurice Jones-Drew is a guy who is battling a bad wheel, right? Got the foot injury that he suffered last year in Oakland. He is battling weight because clearly he is well past his playing weight. And now he's got the legal issues that he is dealing with. Is this a distraction for a young team that is getting started in a new direction? Is this a problem for Maurice and for the Jaguars, or is this just a bump in the road?
Well, I think it is a distraction. There's no doubt about it, because any time you start a new era in Jaguars football with, you know, the new coach, the new general manager, and certainly a roster that's been changed over in a very short amount of time, I mean, it is a distraction. I think the thing that it hurts most is that weekend that the incident supposedly, allegedly happened was sandwiched in between a week of OTAs and another week of OTAs, for the most part, in which Maurice was not participating in OTAs and he was supposed to be in South Florida. Yes, I understand that it's on a weekend. He can do whatever he wants. It just looks bad.
But wait a second. It's not a distraction. I disagree it's a distraction. As a player, having lived
Wait a minute. The coach has got to answer questions about it. The player's got to answer questions about it. That's a distraction.
Most of the day, no one's thinking about it during the day. You're going about your business. And frankly, I don't think anyone really cares all that much. I mean, they want Maurice there. But let's be honest. The guy hasn't been there for most of a year now. Mm-hmm. He wasn't here all last year. He played two games or three games, whatever it was. He got hurt. He has not been involved. He has not been there most of the offseason because he's been rehabbing. I'm not saying he's doing anything wrong. Yes, it's not. You don't want him to be arrested. You don't want this to happen. I think Gus and Dave have handled it fine. I don't think it's a big distraction. I don't think players are losing sleep over it.
He's the best player on your team.
It's a problem. It's not a distraction. It's a problem because
you have distractions.
No, it's not. It's a problem because you have a guy that you don't know what you're going to get at this point. He's overweight.
But that has nothing to do with the incident. That's beyond the field. That's whether or not he's going to be healthy and ready to go.
It could be part of the incident as well, though, John, because if he does get convicted, if he did hit the guy, there's going to be a suspension there. But it goes beyond just that. It goes to the fact that you have a guy overweight at this point. He is often overweight. He gets big during the offseason like a lot of players. Not a big deal when you're healthy. Last time I saw him, he's still limping a little bit. How much can he run? How much? What kind of shape can he get into?
Well, a couple years ago.
It's a Liz Frank injury. You've had that. It's very difficult.
When he had the knee, though, he was overweight.
Yeah, but the knee, Jeff, you and I
was able to work through it. You know,
the knee's different.
I don't, you know, here's what I think, and that's with another injury and clearly looking overweight. A couple years ago, I had major questions about how he would respond in that same scenario with a knee. In a knee that we didn't know whether or not he was going to be able to play again. We're talking about a running back.
It's 2 years, though. 2 years can add a lot for a running back.
Maybe.
It can be tougher. It can be tougher 2 years.
It could be tougher, but, you know, a lot of people doubted him then.
Sure.
And it almost seemed to add a chip on his shoulder in that year. And I would think it's going to add a big chip on his shoulder for this year to prove all the doubters wrong. Because
yeah,
Maurice loves having a chip on his shoulder.
It's different this year, though. It's not just an injury. It's an injury. It's age. It's the fact at this time during when he had the knee, Jeff, he was starting to work out. He was starting to get in the shape. That is going to be an issue with the Liz Frank injury. If it was just that, I wouldn't want to bet against Maurice. But it's that coupled with the fact there's legal issues out there.
That's the big
there
question.
There are real legal issues that could be a huge problem if you're planning for what you're going to do as a franchise. It's not a distraction right now because, you know, big deal to answer a couple questions. It's an issue of what we're going to do in the future. Can we count on Maurice Jones-Drew? I mean, listen, none of us have seen the tape. None of us
have seen the tape. Yeah, we're not going to resolve the legal issue
here. But there's a lot of, listen, if you put your ear to the ground in this community and talk to people, there's a lot of people that say, you know, the tape says this, it says he did it. There's other people that say he didn't.
Here's my ear to the ground.
I'm just saying that the verdict is out. Now, I believe Maurice. I'm going to believe him that he said he didn't do it, but there's a lot of people out there saying other things.
My ear to the ground, I was talking to a very good friend of mine. Very respectable. I mean, if he tells me something, I'm going to believe it. And he's an attorney. And he told me, he said, the guy that is representing the alleged victim.
Who I know very well, by the way. I've known him for more than a decade.
The victim?
No, Patrick Kinnan. Patrick Kinnan, the attorney who's representing the victim. And he's a very well-respected
very
and very
well
good attorney.
Very well-respected, and I was still, look, if he's representing this guy, his quote was, it doesn't look good for Maurice. Which, you know, I mean,
it makes sense.
There's a lot of ambulance chaser type attorneys out there.
That's not Patrick Kinnan.
I'm sitting there. I'm saying this as I'm reading the Torque King by one of the
John Grisham.
John Grisham. And so, I mean, he's not one of those types. You know, he's a respectable attorney. And so, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. This may all go away. You know, it may never even reach a legal point. You know, I don't know, but I'm of the belief that yes, this is a distraction because it's a distraction to the player, Maurice. It's a distraction to the team, and it's a distraction. I'll tell you this. One thing, if I'm David Caldwell, what I'm doing, I'm looking at the waiver wire, and I'm looking at what's out there.
You know,
I'm doing that too, but it's not a distraction, Jeff. It's a problem because you have a young team. You've already cut a bunch of veterans. You've moved in a different direction. Now one of your best players is hurt, legal issues, old for his position, and now you have to say, how much can we count on him this coming year?
And, John, that's where I'm going. You're talking about a guy who hasn't really played for this team since the end of the 2011 season. And he was the league's leading rusher.
Great player.
A guy who, by all accounts, should be able to get back to his weight, get back to his health.
You would think.
But my question is do David Caldwell and Gus Bradley look at the big picture? A guy who hasn't been here, he was unhappy last year, got hurt last year, supposedly goes down to South Florida, then comes back, has this incident. Are they, in their mind, looking and going, you know what? Let's see if we can get him healthy and move him out, just like we did a lot of other guys, and move on with the future.
No, I don't think that, but I think they have to be looking at, like Jeff said,
got
to
be prepared.
I think you have to have a contingency plan. Do you believe that Justin Forsett is a guy who can carry the entire load? If you don't, then you probably should have a plan B at this point because you don't know about Maurice.
But I also would say that if you're Dave and Gus, you don't have to make any decision right now. Listen, there's no value from Maurice Jones-Drew in the open market. There's no one calling saying, hey, we want to trade for a running back with legal questions who has Liz Frank and, you know, you wonder how healthy he's going to be for the start of the season. And so if you're Gus and Dave, I do what Jeff and John just said. I would go find other players and backs to give me depth at that position. But I sit back and watch. I'm in no hurry. That's why it's not a distraction. I sit back and watch and see how this thing develops.
How big of an issue is it for Jed Fish that he hasn't seen this guy in OTAs? Is that a big deal?
No, he's seen the film on him, I'm sure. Yeah. He's watched him play in years past.
He's a running back.
But you're going to expect that they're going to treat that position now much like they did in defensive tackle.
Mm-hmm.
And you go and send Derek Marks, and then all of a sudden, Dedrick comes available from the New England Patriots. Hey, add him up. And then Kyle Love comes available, add him up.
And that's a position that you should be able to do that in the preseason. Running back is historically a position where veterans come in and contribute, so you think they'd be looking that way.
All right, time for us to go to a break. When we come back, we will talk about the Jaguars and playing in London, obviously, the commissioner's comments yesterday, and a lot of reporters getting in the mood for it. You're going to want to stay around and hear what we think about the Jaguars and London. But until then, Joe, take it over.
All right, Brian. Hey, parents, now's the time to sign your children up for the Jaguars Kids Club. It has its advantages. Members get a Jags Kid Club kit. It includes a welcome letter, membership card, certificate, T-shirt, invites to exclusive Jaguar events, and a birthday card from Jackson DeVille. More info, just call JaguarsKidsClub.com. Jaguars This Week rolls on right here on Jaguars Radio.
All right, here we go. Jaguars This Week rolling along here on a very wet and rainy Wednesday evening. Much more to come. Stay tuned for the news at the bottom of the hour for all the details. You won't believe how much rain is coming. All right, the London thing, right? Albert Breer, Bart Hubkap, who used to be here at the Florida Times.
Are we really going to make that credible with Bart Hubkap?
All right, I just wanted to say Bart Hubkap. It's been a long time since we've said those on the air.
His name.
The commissioner yesterday made comments about growing the market in London, and obviously the Jaguars are that team that everybody is pointing to. Hey, forget Bart for just a minute, or even Albert Breer, who is going back and forth on Twitter with Pete Prisco, who was, by the way, in a meeting with us this afternoon. But Mark Florio on Pro Football Talk, Jaguars seen as most likely team to move to London. You guys packing up?
No.
So early. I mean, come on. I mean, listen. Does the NFL, and I think what basically the commissioner said is he'd like someday to have a team in London. That's nothing new. That's nothing.
Been saying that for a long time.
And listen, the Jaguars committed to do a game a year for the next 4 years when the Rams backed out. So you're the natural reaction, and the commissioner was, it's not like he's telling the Jaguars they have to do it. The natural question would be, Jacksonville, would you play two games? Not doesn't mean they'd take two home games. It could be a home and away. It could be a lot of scenarios. Listen, we are jumping to so many assumptions, and everyone knows what happens when you assume. You make an ass out of you and me, and that's what
Can
we're doing.
Can you say that?
I just did. I mean, we're going to jump to a lot of conclusions. The NFL hasn't figured out how to get a team in L.A. yet, the number two TV market in the entire country. I'm not saying one has to supersede the other. You can't do one without the other. But I think it's so early. I think it's something not to worry about. Listen, if Jacksonville supports this team, and Shad Khan has been very clear on this and consistent from day one.
And that's the biggest X factor,
which
you're about to bring up.
If we support the Jaguars as a fan base and as a business community, this team will be here forever.
And if we don't, it's
going somewhere else. Maybe London.
But Shad said that since the beginning.
I mean, nothing's changed.
The contract. That's the implied contract between city and team and every team.
And so I think these people
going to play two games in London.
Sooner or later, it might.
I think it's going to be one game is going to be a home game, and I think the other will be an away game. And then it takes a little bit of pressure off of a fan base.
It doesn't take any more pressure.
Feeling like something is imminent. And then it allows a team to get more exposure in one marketplace. Now, what happens after that, I don't know. But I think eventually it will be a home and away.
Well, one thing is for sure. Every national media outlet is pointing their finger at this team, which means that nothing has changed.
They've been doing that since L.A.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Who cares? That's what I say.
Well, all the listeners care.
I don't care what Bart Hubbock or Albert Breer.
But you can't control the perception.
Pro Football Talk, knuckleheads. I mean, I don't care about any of these knuckleheads.
Right.
Here, I want to deal with reality. Reality is this. We're playing in London the next 4 years. If we have a team that's not been very good the last 5 years or 10 years or however long it's been. We got a new coach, new GM. Let's fix this thing here. Let's let the fans support this team, and it'll take care of itself.
And that's what we're getting. I mean, that's what we're getting,
stupid.
Too. But, yeah, your Twitter's probably blown up, just like ours have, about this issue. Because guys like Albert Breer are always going to point to this franchise. So what you've just said has probably helped some of our listeners understand it. But it's not going away.
No,
it's not going because the commissioner's not going to stop talking.
You know what? Most of the listeners are saying, "Hey, where there's smoke, there might be fire."
Yeah, but Jeff, they were saying that in 2008 when
the smoke came from the commissioner's mouth.
They're saying 2008 where everyone was saying, "Tomorrow we're going to L.A. Mm-hmm. The moving trucks are here," and I was like, "Everyone relax."
Well, that would require a ship.
Well, I'm talking about when in 2008 when we were going to L.A.
Well, they could pull them up onto the boat.
Well, I mean, but does everyone remember that when we were going to L.A. in 2008? It was happening. Like, I mean, I can remember having conversations. Oh, next year.
Sure.
It's going to be in L.A. Jaguars. And I'm like, relax, everybody. We're a long way off from that. Now, if we don't support this team, which, by the way, we have, 20th rated attendance in the NFL last year. Tampa was 31st on an above-average football team. And they, listen, you want to talk a team that could be going to London? It's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Mr. Glazer owns Manchester United, has ties to London. It could be a very natural bridge and transition. Miami was 29th in attendance. So if we're going to throw all these Florida teams out there, there's a lot of teams that are bringing up the rear behind us.
The only thing that's difficult for people to grasp is that a game or even two games in London does not mean a franchise moving
there. Doesn't mean anything.
Shad Khan has said since day one that to make it work in this market, you have to be outside the box.
Yep.
People are uncomfortable with outside the box, so they automatically assume that
step
C and D and E.
Well, how about this? Does everyone remember that less than 20 years ago, Green Bay played four of their games in Milwaukee?
Sure.
Right.
And four in Lambeau. Now, today's NFL fan probably go, no way, that would never happen. Lambeau's like title town, all this. No. That was an awful
reality.
Franchise. They were not very good. And they played half their games in Milwaukee.
All right. We need to break. Joe, get us to news so that Steph and the crew here can give us the details and all this rain that's coming. When we come back, we'll tell you about one of the good guys from Jacksonville who's landed with a really good team.
All right, you got it, Brian. Jaguars fans, you can be rewarded just for being social at the new Jaguars Social League. Sign up, sync your social media platforms at jaguars.com/social league, and you'll earn points every time you post something Jaguars, then use those points to win great prizes, including a chance to win tickets to that Jaguars game in London. Jaguars This Week will roll on right after this on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back to Jaguars This Week. Hey, Brian Sexton. This portion of Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Fanatics.com.
Thank you very much, Joe. Nice to have you with us this evening. Jaguars This Week, live from the WOKV News Studios on Jacksonville South Side. Brian Sexton, John Osher, Tony Boselli, and Jeff Lagerman. And we told you before the break that a really good guy and a former Jaguar has a job.
One of the greatest Jaguars of all time.
That's where I'm going. Where does Darryl Smith, who is now, by the way, a Baltimore Raven, fit in the Jaguars pantheon? You know, where does he fit up there with the great players?
He is...
he has the tackle.
One of the top three defensive players in Jaguars history. Easy.
No, I disagree.
That's what? Stunning.
I don't think he's top three. Like, Rasheen Mathis was better.
I got him there.
I think Tony Brackett was
two.
Better. I think.
Name me another.
I think Marcus Stroud and John Henderson were better.
Oh.
I think Darryl Smith's
both
a very...
of them better than Darryl Smith?
Yeah, I do. I think they're more impactful. I think they're... Now, Darryl might have done it at a
now,
higher level.
You have an argument about Marcus Trout, but John Henderson, no way.
I think they did it maybe. I think Darryl did it longer at a high level for a longer period.
That means
but
a lot.
But at their best, those two were better impact players for a 3-year period probably than Darryl was.
See, this is an argument that I constantly have with people. To me, it's more difficult to do something for a longer period of time at a high level than it is to maybe get to an elite level for a short period of time, which is what I viewed Marcus at, and John was at that level for 1 year. That was it.
Do you think Marcus was great for 1 year?
No. John.
Oh.
John was truly great. I mean, unstoppable, unbeatable for 1 year.
Okay.
And then he was a good player, better than good player. He was a very good player for a few years. But then there were certain years that John was not very good. Now, if you, and how memory sometimes can be short, Marcus Stroud, when he came in the first couple years, people were wondering, was this guy even worth a first-round pick?
Well, his rookie year, he was beaten so badly in Seattle. That was the last game Tony Boselli was around. He was just thrown all over the place by Steve Hutchinson, who had been drafted right after him. And so people did wonder. Are you talking about 07 being that year when he whipped Alan Faneca?
Yes. Well, it wasn't just Alan Faneca. It was Alan Faneca.
Who was, by the way, a multiple Pro Bowl guard for the Steelers.
I think it was Steve Hutchinson also that same year.
Okay.
And then there was one other guard. There was three guards that year that were
considered. He just ate them up.
Maybe Pro Bowl, well, clearly Pro Bowl players, but also possible Hall of Fame type guards, and John chewed him up.
And then the next year, we were in Cincinnati, and he was resorting to, you know, trying to rip the eyeballs out of...
Yeah, but listen, he was... My point is, John was, like, elite for a couple years, and he was good for a number of years around being elite. And I think, was Darryl elite? Like, was he one of the best linebackers in football ever? I don't think so. He was very good.
You could make a case that his numbers spoke that he was an elite player.
Guys, I mean, listen, I think if you ask GMs and coaches around the league, was Darryl Smith ever a elite linebacker, and there's not going to be a lot of guys coming and ringing that bell. If you asked, were Marcus Stroud and were John Henderson elite defensive tackles, you're going to have at least a handful, at the very least, saying those guys were dominant.
Okay. There was a time when I was in Indy where they worried 2 or 3 years about game planning for the two tackles.
Yeah.
And, you know, now at that outside linebacker position, it's tougher to do that. But I think it's longevity versus, you know, short-term impact.
And
it's hard
and
to make
that's
that,
a
yeah.
roundabout argument. Yeah. You don't know. You know, everybody's going to have a different opinion. You know, longevity.
Certainly
versus,
Darryl's the best linebacker ever to play.
No doubt. Best linebacker ever to play. But, you know,
that's okay.
Linebackers typically get more notoriety when they get sacks.
Right.
Or they're Brian Urlacher, Ray Lewis type middle linebacker, and just make a ton of tackles. But Darryl wasn't a pass rushing linebacker. He was a for the most part a will linebacker, but also had switched positions to playing a Sam strong side linebacker. And so, but the thing that was impressive most about him, he was good at everything that he did, and he was better than just good. He was very good.
Well, and listen, don't get me wrong. I mean, me saying he's the fourth or fifth best player in the history of the Jaguars.
Yeah, it's not too bad
on the defensive side of the ball. I'm not saying he's not a good player.
Yeah, don't put him over John Henderson. I mean, underneath the John Henderson.
I don't know.
Now he's a Baltimore Raven playing for a team that obviously would be pretty good again. And let's go to this team and OTAs, last couple of days, next couple of days, next week, the mini camp. Quarterback competition. We keep hearing.
Still,
you know,
rotating.
Yeah, these guys are working and working and working. I mean, I'm biased because I look at a guy as the number 10 pick in the draft and I see Blaine Gabbert with some real tools. And my untrained eye, 19 years of doing this, tells me that Blaine Gabbert is a better quarterback than Chad Henne. Am I wrong?
Let's take it even further, though, Brian. What it tells you is if you are rotating quarterbacks at this time of the year, you don't have a starting quarterback.
Okay. That's fair. I mean,
you don't have a starter. You're trying to find out who your starter is, and at that position, that is the one position that if you haven't figured that out by now...
But maybe they have.
There's some big questions going in.
Maybe they have it. They're selling this competition thing because, I mean, if Gus is doing anything...
What's going to make a player better?
Yeah, he is selling competition, 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 competition. And if you name your starting quarterback in June at OTAs, does that take away from your message in training camp?
I don't think so because in this case, if you were to name Blaine Gabbert your starting quarterback right now, that takes no pressure off Blaine Gabbert. Zero. Because the pressure for Blaine Gabbert is being the 10th overall pick and not performing the first 2 years, and the fan base, and realizing this is it.
But if they
this
know
is the
Blaine's
last year.
If they know that Blaine's a starter, and I'm not saying they do, but if they do, I guess what's the difference in having him compete for 3 weeks during the preseason and then naming him at that point?
Well, I think there's a big difference because I think the quarterback is a position that you need stability at.
All right, here's what
And so if he's your guy, if you know he's your guy, then as an offensive lineman, I want to know who my guy is.
I want to wait till the pads go on to figure out if they truly believe he's their guy or not.
Well, which goes back to my original point. If you don't know who your guy is in June, then you don't have a starter. You know, I'm not saying that can't change.
My eyes are telling me that when you watch practice, there are glimpses of wow moments with Blaine Gabbert. Wow moments. Certain throws that you just go, wow, did you see that?
Well, I think Blaine's going to win the job. I think most people expect him to win the job. I think he's still got to win the job.
But what's got to happen, Jeff, in order for him to be named the starter is that you got to have those wow moments.
No.
But then you can't have those moments that you go, what was that?
Mm-hmm. I don't care about wow moments right now.
You have to be consistent. You know, and that's the one thing I think that from watching the OTA so far, that if he can get to a level of consistency, and I'm not saying that it always has to be wow, but it's wow, and then, hey, that was pretty good, then he can be clearly named the guy. But I think that Brian is right, and that the perception and the talking points that Gus Bradley has made to his team about making it about competition, he's not going to abandon that at this point.
It happens after the third preseason game.
I don't think wow moments right now matter. He had wow moments. And listen, I'm for one rooting for Blaine. I want him to be our starting quarterback. I still think he has it in him. But I don't care about wow moments right now. I saw wow moments last year. I saw wow moments his rookie year. All the wow moments you can go put, you know, where, you know.
Say it, Buscelli.
Bury him somewhere. And put
Come
him
on,
the
you
sun.
Said something bury else earlier.
Put him where the sun don't shine.
There you
and,
go.
I mean, listen, it doesn't matter.
Easy,
the bottom
Vic.
Line,
easy, Vic.
He is not going to be judged positively or negatively until you put the pads on and you get against a different color jersey.
Which is why they're going to wait until
it
the preseason to have it play out.
All this stuff with right now, I know he has a big arm. I know he's athletic. I know he's smart. I know he can make every throw. That is not the question. My question is, can he do it consistently over a 60-minute period and lead this team to victories?
Right, well, if you're saying you want to see it during the preseason, that's what they're doing in having the competition during the first couple of games of the preseason.
I'm fine with that. Yeah. I'm just saying, but
if
you don't know at this point, John, it's an issue. That's all I'm saying. If you're a GM of a team, you're not going, boy, I hope in June before the season, I don't know who my starting quarterback is. That's a great position to be in.
All right, well, a wow moment from today's practice that means something. Cecil Shorts had a catch today, and I don't know if you saw it or not, John. It was a back shoulder throw that looked like it was clearly out of bounds. And Cecil Shorts turned around, much like he did in Indianapolis, makes the catch, taps his feet when his body is completely outstretched, and it happened right at the feet of the general manager, David Caldwell. And I went, holy cow, what a play.
Yeah,
and that's a guy
good.
That all
Cecil's
OTAs
on track to be, you know,
has looked
1,200-yard
special,
guy.
Special. And then one other moment I wanted to bring up from today's practice, Dwayne Gratz, the rookie cornerback. He was covering Cecil Shorts on a deep ball, and Cecil Shorts, to me, is going to be – I think Pete Prisco is going to put him in one of his most underrated players things, and I would agree with that. Mm-hmm. He's a rising player, and here's a rookie corner that's covering him in OTAs, and Dwayne Gratz made a fantastic play on a deep ball, and it was one of those things where you go, that's what you want to see out of a draft pick corner who may end up having to start or may be a starter.
But I'll say this about this time of year. I agree with Jeff on the Cecil Shorts. I mean, I wasn't out there today. I was out there the day before.
Wait a minute,
he's got that.
Cecil,
he can tell us.
And he looks two different things. He looks like a number one receiver. Mm-hmm. I mean, he just carries himself the way he runs routes. I mean, he looks good.
And at that position, that matters.
It matters a lot. Other than that, with all these rookies, I don't put my – listen, all I can tell, I don't know if a kid can play from watching him in OTAs. But I know if he can't. And so when I watch OTAs, I want to see the rookie class, and I want to be able to them to pass on to the next stage of saying, oh, I think they can play.
Right.
I don't want to have to look at, because sometimes you watch these rookies come in, and you know day one in OTAs, they can't play football.
And when you talk to
now,
GMs, they want to know those guys belong early.
Yeah, I've been fooled the other way, where you're like, man, he can really play, and then you put the pads on, he can't do it.
I'm not saying anybody can play or can't play in OTAs. I'm just saying that there's wow moments. And maybe those wow moments lead
your
to
wow
something
moments.
When it gets to the regular season. You don't know.
I think you put way too much credit
but
in
moments.
But wow
moments in OTAs are a heck of a lot better than not having any.
No, I just don't want any.
Leading into the regular season.
I don't care about wow moments. I just don't want any wow, he stinks moments. That's what I don't want. Because then it's over.
Such a pessimist.
Strong opinions.
I'm just telling you. I don't think you can make these great assumptions whether they're going to be great players from OTAs. I think you can make assumptions that they stink when they go on OTAs because they can't play.
I think you said that.
Saying it again.
Find out what Jeff and Tony fight about in the next segment on Jaguars This Week. Joe.
Hey, how about a wow moment for the ladies? The Jaguars have created a club dedicated to the experience of the female fan. That's all you ladies 18 and older. It's the Jaguars Women's Club. This unique program is designed to connect with, provide exclusive experiences for, and engage the Jags' female fans through updates, special offers, events, and other great benefits. Need more info? Just go to jaguars.com/womensclub. Jaguars This Week rolls on right here on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back to Jaguars This Week. Hey, the Jaguars are going to pay a special visit to the zoo tomorrow night, 6:30 to 8:30. It's a Stand United pep rally featuring our very own Tony Vaselli, some Jaguars players, Aurora cheerleaders, Jackson DeVille. It's going to be an evening of family-friendly fun featuring the Jaguars D-line, some interactive and inflatable games for kids, and all kinds of prize giveaways from the Jags and local vendors. Entrance to the zoo for the rally is free and open to the public. Brian Sexton.
I'll be there.
You will be there.
Well, we're kicking off the caravans. We had a couple rallies. I know, Jeff, you did the Knockatee one when I was gone,
I did.
Right? And we had one in Nassau County. It was great. Now we're kicking off. The caravans will be at the zoo's a rally, really, because it's Duval County. So we're doing a rally at the zoo, which was a lot of fun. Players, all kinds of stuff. Obviously, you can go look at the animals out there. Not just animals as players, but real animals as well.
You'd qualify as one.
I would. You can do both with me. Just throw me food and feed me. You can pet me.
Concession stands will be open.
Come at 6 o'clock and watch the feeding of Tony Vaselli.
Feed me, pet me, whatever you want to do. But then we go to.
They used to buy a lot of tickets to that. Yeah, feed of the alligator, the big Gomek at the alligator farm.
Maybe it's an idea to make money.
I think it is.
And then we go to Daytona on Friday night. And then we'll be in Orlando, Altamont Springs, so kind of East Orlando, yep. Saturday at 1 p.m. So I'll be at all three. I know Johnny O will be at, I think, Daytona. You're going to be there?
Friday night, yes.
You'll be at Friday night. It'll be a lot of fun, a lot of players, autographs, Jackson DeVille, the cheerleaders, good times for all. Come join us.
All right, so I'm going to put some words in Baselli's mouth here, Logs, and I'll get you to react to them. Baselli is not, it doesn't really take the whole OTA thing as seriously as you do,
mm-hmm.
right? Obviously, the offensive line coach takes it pretty seriously today, huh? He was a little heated.
Yeah, there was a moment in which they completed a team drill, and then you couldn't help but hear it because it was, 15 yards away, and he was giving it to them. Obviously, he wasn't happy with some performance or their performance overall and a couple drills leading up to that point. And former player, current offensive line coach George Yarno gave it to him.
I like it.
That's not been the norm around here.
Very,
for you.
Very different.
Well, it was very normal when I was here.
Yeah,
well,
my days are. But, Andy Heck's years, all due respect to your former Virginia tight ends coach.
That's right.
But a guy that was much more cerebral in his approach to the offensive line. And you're saying that doesn't work as well with the big boys.
I think you have to yell at the big guys.
Very, very different, because Andy Heck was a guy that, didn't even raise his voice. Sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. But George Yarno, he's very, very loud, works him very hard. And I will say that in the last two practices, yesterday and today, which they had the week off, with the holiday weekend, and then they had that week off, and all of a sudden they come back to work. And holy cow, did he work them hard yesterday and today. Yesterday, I thought one of the young offensive linemen, Mills, was going to drop. He works them hard now on footwork, change of direction. In fact, I think Brad Meester had the comments that, boy, I need to get in a better shape.
Well, that's how it should be. Listen, I'll just say this. From the time I was at USC through the Jaguars, and then even the short time with the Texans, but that didn't really count. The offensive line coach is one of the toughest coaches on the staff. You get coached hard at that position. I don't know about you, Jeff, but everywhere I went, that guy coached you hard, and it was demanding, and it was hard
and loud
and loud.
Almost everywhere I've ever been, the offensive line coach was loud
and very interesting four-letter words. Some just interesting words.
Yeah, can you give me a sample of
I don't want to get fired.
The
right
three-letter word that you said earlier is about as far as you want to go.
Well, that's my wife and I have that argument all the time about that word. I think it's fine.
All right, since we're talking about the offensive line, the first-round pick
looks good.
Well, it's OTAs. You can't say that. No OTAs.
No, he looks athletic.
He does. He really does.
I'm not saying he can play. I'm just saying, listen, I'll go back. You can tell if a guy has a chance to play and is athletic. I don't know if he's a good football player. I think he is based on what I saw in college. I'm just glad that I didn't go out there and look at our first pick and say, gosh, he can't play.
It's easy to see why he was the number two.
Yeah, he's very athletic.
And you would think that's going to help the interior.
It's going to help everybody. I mean, if we can get two tackles that can man up on defensive ends, it gives you a lot of options on blitz pickups and what you can do in sliding and covering different individuals inside if you need to. That's important.
Maybe the happiest one of all with that draft selection after kind of seeing it play out in OTAs, maybe Mercedes Lewis. I mean, here's a guy for the last couple of years, with the exception of the 10 touchdown season that he had, was a guy that had to stay in to provide extra help for a tackle, whether it been Guy Wimper or struggling Cameron Bradfield, who, by the way, I think Cameron Bradfield's still going to develop into a good player. But
tackle or guard?
I think he's
a long way to go.
You know, the two guys that I think have great value along that offensive line are Mike Brewster and Cameron Bradfield. Because when you go to game day, you have typically seven offensive linemen active. Mike Brewster can play center and guards, and then Cameron Bradfield is going to be able to play left and right side. And let's not forget that Cameron Bradfield, as a very green rookie, was able to do that with great success a couple years ago.
Against the Steelers in particular.
I'll just say this. So I'm getting off the Cam Bradfield train. I got on that thing, was driving it with logs.
You are so logs fair last year. Weather.
I'm not
it's
fair
unbelievable.
Weather. I just want to see it. I like the kid. He's very athletic. But
you're saying you're not trusting your eyes what you saw last year when you were jumping all over the bandwagon?
I'm trusting my eyes what I saw in film is what I'm trusting right now.
But getting back to our original point about Mercedes.
Believe it. Believe what you see, Tony.
If there are two veterans on this team who like the changes, it's Tyson Alualo and Mercedes Lewis. And talking to Mercedes Lewis about 2 weeks ago, it is striking how excited he is about what's going on. Now, does that translate on the field? We'll see. But he thinks he's in for a big year.
Well, and he should be excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
And he should be most excited about the addition of Luke Jokel. That's going to allow him flexibility to go out for a pass. You know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you're Mercedes, you're going, that was a great pick. That was not just a great pick. That was a phenomenal pick. Because here's a guy that's going to be able to do what he thinks he can do best. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, he was the Mackey Award winner in college, for heaven's sakes.
I think we all know about Brad. What about the guards? What do you think about Will Rackley and Uche's back working now after early on in OTAs being a bit limited?
In the first part of OTAs, you could clearly see that Uche Nwaneri was not quite ready. You know, coming back from a knee surgery, he was kind of struggling to find his groove. There were a couple times where he'd do a drill and you could see that something grabbed him in that knee and he kind of back out of it. The last 2 days, as stressful as it's been with George Arnold, the offensive line coach, and really working him hard, Uche's been right in there for everything. Now, Will Rackley's got a lot to prove. I mean, we don't really know what kind of player that Will Rackley can be at all. When we saw him, he was not very good.
Well, you're the expert OTA guy. What are you seeing?
I'm saying he's looking okay. No, you know, he's looking okay.
He who judges all things from OTAs.
Well, the one thing that I would have liked to have seen out of Will Rackley is that body kind of change. You know, typically when a guy comes in as a young player, his body changes, and his body hasn't quite changed yet. But that doesn't mean that he can't be good.
All right. I'm out the next 2 weeks. Can you mediate?
I'll look forward to that.
All right, everybody. Guys, thanks so much. Have a great night. And Jaguars This Week resumes from Everbank Field next Wednesday at 6 o'clock.